You're listening to the Bathtub Refinishing Podcast. Powered by Bathtub Guys Refinishing. We discuss the refinishing industry, interview owners and operators, and give tips to business owners and entrepreneurs. Now, here's your host, Daniel Montalvo.
Hello, everybody. I cut off the music quick because I just want to get this thing started. We have some special guests here from Ecopel. Go ahead and introduce yourself, guys.
Hey guys, I'm Patrick Foley. I'm the owner of Refinish Bath Solutions. So we're the manufacturer of Ecopel.
I'm Kelly Evans. I'm the operations manager here at the warehouse for Refinish Bath.
I'm Russell, and I'm the lead tech in training for Bath Solutions.
And you guys know the panel that we usually have here. So Jonathan from Perfect Surface Glazing and Bathtub Guys Tampa.
Hello, everybody.
And then we have Carlos from 8 Kings Renovation. Good friends of mine. And honestly, people that I wanted to have here for this occasion, because we've followed your guys' stuff for a while. I remember there was a product years ago that my dad actually invested in called Liquid Tub Liner. And then shortly after, I started seeing Ecopel come out and stuff like that. So it was like kind of, I guess, at the cusp of when this stuff started to like become a little bit more mainstream, the self-leveling, pour-on kind of epoxy stuff for the bathtubs. And specifically, Patrick, I've seen your videos like a bunch of times. So I think it's pretty cool having you on here. One of the things I wanted to ask you specifically before we get everyone else involved is, like, what is your story in like how you got into refinishing, and then what led you to like get into products and manufacturing?
Sure. Yeah. Great question. You know, for me, my father was an electrostatic guy. The company that we worked for did both electrostatic painting and bathtub refinishing. So in the summer, while in high school, I worked there as my father's helper, doing electrostatic work. And when I finished school and I was 18, I started doing, they leveled me up, I guess, and trained me to be a tub guy. So I was out spraying tubs. Eventually, I had issues with the management there, and I decided it'd be better for me to do my own thing. And for the next 20 years or so, that's what I did. Ran my own little tub business, and everything was going great. But once we had kids, that's when I was like, man, I gotta get out of the chemical business. I can't be ripping paint on my ride home for an hour every day.
Yep.
And that's when I came across Ecopel in general. And I started out thinking, well, I could just pour on the Ecopel and refinish tubs that way, charge a little bit more, make a whole day of it, doing just one job at a time, like one high-end job versus a couple of spray jobs. And once I couldn't really, I couldn't get $1,000 a tub to spend an entire day in there doing that kind of work. Mm-hmm. So that was when I started making the YouTube videos and selling it as a DIY on Amazon. And, 6 months later, I told the person that owned the rights to Ecopel, I offered to buy it, and he more or less laughed me out of the room, and ended up making him an offer. And then COVID happened, and he wasn't ready to hold on and fight through that. So let me buy it. And the rest was really history when it comes to the DIY side of it. But in reality, the entire time that I've owned it and sold on Amazon and done all the DIY stuff, my entire mission has been, how can a pro use this stuff? And that's really what led us to be here today. I worked with Russell the last year engineering, trying to solve all the problems of how we can spray it and do a job in 2 hours as opposed to, 8 hours. And, like I said, we're finally here.
That's awesome. You know, yeah. I just want to say, so the guy that laughed you out of the room is honestly stupid because I believe that every good product or service or company needs a good brand ambassador. You know, the old Equipel stuff was like generic, like logos and like, you know, like just looked hyper corporatized without a face. And it's like, you could do that when you're an established brand, but when nobody knows you, you need a face to the brand. And I feel like you've done a good job at that. So I just wanted to say like that guy, I think he's done for that, but I'm going to go ahead you two go ahead and just let me know, like, what is it you guys do at Equipel? What's your position and like, what does that entail?
So I'm the operations manager and essentially I try to make sure that everything runs smoothly at all times. I deal with customers, I deal with Amazon, I deal with trainees, any techs that have questions, things like that. A lot of the shipments, orders, anything really Patrick needs, I handle, and anything that our employees and staff needs. I have been interested in a big push for like social media, so I'll have our customer service and social media reps handle that, which it's slow, and you guys do a really good job of that, so I should take notes. But I think that that is an important thing right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's kind of what I do. A little of everything.
Cool.
All right. So in my end, I'm actually, I have my own company. My company is True Glaze.
Okay.
And me and Pat have the same kind of backstory. We worked for the same company and stuff. And the only difference is that I climbed the ladder to a certain extent that that's it. You're capped out.
Okay.
You know, as a business owner, you guys know that you only pay so much to the technician and, you know what I mean, before you start hurting.
Yep.
And that company, I reached my limit to what I could do, and I saw the direction that the company was going, and I just decided to go on my own. And ever since, I've just been spraying on my own and stuff. It's, you know, really been like me and like a couple of other guys and stuff, just a small team and stuff like that. I never took it to the extreme of, you know, having like 5-10 guys or whatever. You just kept it simple and, you know, went from there. So I've been spraying now for 19 years, just like that. Okay. And stuff. I'm still on the field to this day and stuff. And when Pat reached out that he has this Equipel and this product, I was very intrigued, very interested. Right off the bat, I knew that this was, you know, where it should be going because of the fumes and all the stuff. And just the durability. The mm-hmm. product is solid. You know what I mean? You can't compare paint to epoxy and stuff. So, and then ever since, you know, from the pour on, we just kept shooting ideas back and forth. I kept troubleshooting stuff for him. And now I, you know, take charge of training, you know, new techs and other people with no experience, how to spray this stuff and, you know, take it to the next level.
Okay. Awesome. So, and your guys' partnership came about because you guys worked at the same company and that's kind of where the relationship started, right?
Correct.
All right. What was the other company using out of curiosity? What product?
They were using Sumter Coatings. They were using Sumter Coatings, and then when Sumter bought Top Coat, they still had like a private line of Sumter Coatings bath rubber finishing kits.
Okay.
They had like 10 or 20 techs out there doing, you know, booked 3 months in advance when we worked there.
Okay.
And now they've been sold and they have probably like 4 or 5 techs. It was a tough spot for us, but it was a great place to learn.
Okay.
And they took us to where we are today.
Okay. So, one question I have for you guys and, what exactly is Equipel? Is it pure epoxy or is it a hybrid?
It's a hybrid resin. So the bulk of it is epoxy, but it's modified so that it's going to have extra UV properties. And, you know, obviously the epoxy is glue, right? So it's going to get a great bond. It's going to be tough as nails, but the variant versus just a standard epoxy with the additives that are in there. It's made so that it's not going to yellow, and it's not going to it's not going to yellow, and it's going to dry harder. So that was one of the big things that urethane gave us for all those years before we started modifying the chemicals that hardened it. The best qualities were the hardness and the pencil hardness, and that it could flex with the hot and cold of the shower so that it actually maintains its bond to the epoxy primer that's under there already. But that's how it was formulated. It was originally made, to be just a flooring epoxy, and the guys, the chemists that actually created the formula, they started tinkering around with all the stuff that was going on with tubs in Europe, and they found that they could make it pourable, and that's really how all of that came to be, in general. So, in terms of properties, it is like the foundation is an epoxy resin, and there's definitely a difference between when you call it a resin versus calling it a paint. Mm-hmm. And that's why even with the urethanes that like you can get from Hawk or Midwest or any of those guys, they're selling you urethane resin, which is more raw and it's in that state. Versus, just the complete garbage. If you bought Rust-Oleum, you're buying just paint, and paints are, it's not going to do anything except give us an extra couple $100 when we have to come and strip it.
Carlos, do you have any questions about the product in particular?
That was literally my first question. Was does it yellow? I do, yeah. Epoxy a lot.
Great question.
And epoxy yellows over time. Well, at least the countertop aspect of it and the floorings that I've done. Mm-hmm. Just recently ran into a different type of epoxy hybrid as well, where it's claimed non-yellowing, and I've just switched on to that and I really like it. But that was when Daniel first told me about you guys, that was literally my first question. We paint white literally 99% of the time. Mm-hmm. And with the experiences that I've had with epoxy, it yellows after a while, specifically if it's closer to sun or like a window. Mm-hmm. Right now we're on a table where I did epoxy maybe in January.
Yep.
But because it doesn't see any sun, it has not yellowed, at least to me it has not.
No, it still has the window.
I'm honestly surprised looking at it. So, yeah. That was pretty cool that you guys are telling me that, because the fact that you're telling me it doesn't yellow and it's non-toxic.
Well, also that it's a hybrid, because I feel like for a lot of professionals, that is an important thing to note, because a lot of people completely, I will tell you, I talk to a lot of refinishers. They will dismiss anything that's epoxy because they automatically assume it'll yellow. Now that we know that it's a hybrid, that kind of changes the game, because it's like that poly, what is it called?
Polycoat
is what Carlos was referring to. That's a polyurethane epoxy hybrid, and it's
polyaspartic.
Yeah, and it's being used for countertops. And so, that's something interesting to note. So, all the people who watch this now, they kind of have that. Do you have any questions yourself, Jonathan, for Patrick here?
So in theory, it's pretty much like an epoxy floor coating design with a epoxy primer to get it to stick to the porcelain is where we're at with it for the most part.
So for us, the acapella itself would stick just fine. Mm-hmm. We wanted to get that same, we've sold 150,000 or so of those DIY kits over the last 5 years. Those specifically maintain high ratings. They're a little finicky to use sometimes. They're not, pro based, but the formula itself is as durable as it gets, right? So what we wanted to do was do the minimum amount of modification that we could. And because when you pour it, it's so thick, it covers a lot better. When you spray it, color wise, it's more translucent. But so if you're spraying like pink tile with Ecapel, you're not going to be able to cover it with just top coat. So what we've made is an epoxy primer that's a waterborne epoxy primer that specifically has a ton of pigment in it. So ideally, the way we're trying to teach people to do it is spray it all so you get that nice uniform white, and then spray the top coat over it, and that's where you're going to get all the you're going to get the hardness and the gloss of an Ecapel finish. That's the main reason for the primer is literally for
just coverage.
Color coverage. Yeah,
it's similar, I guess, to what we do. So we use Midwest chemicals, and we basically do the same thing. Whenever it's an oddball color, we'll prime it to eat up the color, and then we'll top coat it. So I guess it's the same principle there. Now, I do have Ecapel spray on here. It was sent to me. It got to my house late on Monday, so I haven't had a chance to product test it. I have it here, but I have used... Well, I was one of the DIY buyers. I bought the kit to test it out a few years ago. It was when you guys had the little fry box in the thing. The product itself dries really hard. It works well. The self-leveling is there. Now, I do have some criticisms of it. I'm curious if these are common criticisms. And I guess you, Kelly, could tell me if this is something that people bring up. Mixing by hand for 10 minutes is... insane.
Yes.
Is that something that's brought up often?
Surprisingly, it doesn't come up that often because I think people, doing it themselves want to make sure that they're doing it right. They don't want it to look DIY. So they're going to take everything we say, and for the most part, most people are going to follow the instructions and not really question it.
Okay.
But for pros, yeah, you're going to say, what on earth is this?
Yeah.
There's not a pro that I've encountered in the entire time that I've done it that's not been like, but in all seriousness, can I just use a drill mixer?
That was literally my question, right? Yeah. I was
going to ask. And when I put it, I'm going to do it. But it just introduces air if you do that.
Okay, I was about to ask that. Yep. So it creates air bubbles, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. And then you got a heat guy. Extra, which can make it too thin on the sidewalls, and if that happens, then you get like kind of looks like you have fish eyes on there. If you use like too much heat in there and it runs down too thin, it's translucent. So it's never the people that complain about the pour on kits are never the 70-year-old grandmother that does it. It's always the guy that's, I've been painting walls for 20 years. I'm an expert handyman. It never says I'm a little old lady and I did a bad job. It always says, which means I didn't follow the directions, it sets me off a little bit because they'll always say, I followed everything. I even mixed it an extra 5 minutes. And then I say, something along the lines of, I'm not allowed to do customer service because of that, but I would say something like, so which part of the directions did you follow? I don't remember. And also mix it an extra 5 minutes, or also pour a gallon of acetone in it,
Well, honestly, that's part of the reason I don't do customer service anymore anyway.
I can't not be reasonable.
So, Kelly, what is... If you had to point at one thing in specific that people complain about a lot with the product, what would it be?
For DIY?
For DIY specifically.
What is the main? They forget about, honestly, there's one that's funny and then one that's not. Forget about the drain. They'll put the tape on, not come back, take the tape off, and it goes completely over their drain.
Okay.
That is a problem. Okay. That is a problem. But the funny one is like, a cat jumping in it.
I've heard wet. It more than I'd like.
Yeah, that's happened too.
A bug died in it. Things like that. Nothing nothing too consistent and crazy. Yeah, that's really it. Other than the one that I feel bad about is the drain. They're not following how to do that, or they just forget about it and come back.
What do you guys recommend to do for the drain? Do you guys recommend to use like a cup to cover it, or how do you guys handle that?
So with porn nowadays, I did make a couple of videos before where I had like an upside down cup or some type of a tape dam. It's easier, honestly, for me. With porn, I would now recommend just pouring it with regular, you know, regularly taping the drain and then slice it out with the blade. And then afterwards, I let it run down. I scoop it once when I'm finished. I let it run down for like half an hour. Then I'll scoop it. Then I'll give it another half hour. I'll scoop it. That'll be. It's usually like two and a half hours or so before the material is not dripping any further onto the tape, and that's when I would pull it. Mm-hmm. If you have a plumber or it's a claw tub or anything like that, the best way to do it is to remove the drain. But I personally have gotten damage claims for installing a drain wrong, and then I got in trouble for that. So I don't recommend like pros doing that.
Okay.
So that to me, like, you know, makes it so unpro friendly. And so one other point that you had asked about the complaints, we also made, so we were more or less exclusively talking about the pour-on kit, but we also, like, right before we figured out how to spray it, we figured out how to roll it as well.
Yep, and I have a sample of that as well.
That's what gets us complaints. So it works great, but if you don't clean, and this would be the same thing, if you just took the Midwest urethane and didn't do any primer and didn't do any etching or anything, mm-hmm. you just wipe it down with acetone and spray it, you're going to get fish eyes. If you're doing tile or like raw porcelain and you don't like etch it or go, you've got to go hard with that or else you're going to get fish eyes. Maybe like 5 to 10% of the time with DIY roll on is never on a fiberglass, but always on like tile walls where they just didn't clean them. And then you'll see just, you know, a 2x2 section of fish eyes, and it's not fun, but you can sand it down and, you know, roll another coat. But that was, that's something that we're actively trying to solve as well. We're trying to put in one of those, you know how they make those wipes, individually packed, wipe-on primer wipes.
Yep, I've seen those.
I have that in the works, and I'm going to include that in the roll-on kit when we finalize that. And that should give us that one extra layer so that it breaks all that surface tension and allows us to flow out in case you don't follow directions and clean this up.
What were you going to say, Kelly? I know you wanted to jump in there.
Yeah, I feel like that is for roll-on specifically. That is the number one complaint. And it's tricky because it is straight up surface contamination. And, you know, somebody will say, well, I cleaned it and all the things, but they're not understanding the science behind it, right? They're not understanding that it's going to... and the roller, yeah. The roller itself too is going to keep pulling it.
What happens is it's mostly, like she said, surface contamination.
Mm-hmm.
All the techs know that when you're going to do a job, you know, the prep is the number one thing. You know, you have to get that soap scum off. Even though you wiped it down and it kind of looks clean, depending on the shade of that tub, if you put the razor blade on it, soap scum is there and stuff. And I believe that that's the, you know, number one reason why a lot of it
fails.
I would also imagine that a lot of people treat the roll-on instead of, I've heard Patrick say it a million times, instead of pushing the material where you want it, they treat it like a roller. And it's constant pressing down and pressing up, and then the roller starts to deteriorate. That also probably doesn't help.
But you gotta understand, this is a DIY. Right. So, you know, us coming from our world versus a regular person, you go to Home Depot, you pick up a touch-up kit, and you roll it on. You know, you're used to just rolling a wall or whatever. So that's their mentality. They're going to bring into the, okay, I'm just going to roll it on there and go for it. You know what I mean? And they just skip a bunch of stuff, and that's where the problem comes in.
They think, oh, I cleaned it enough. And he's right about the soap scum. It's invisible. And I'll tell customers that, too. I know you think you did it, but you skipped this step, and we recommend this because you can't see it. You can't see it. If you bought a house and it's a 1967 tub in there, you cannot tell me that, you know, wiping it down with acetone is going to clean it. That's not, you know.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to get to the spray-on EcoPel, but I have a few more questions about the DIY because it is, I guess, been on the market the longest. So, and I've used it, so I have a couple more questions. This one's for you specifically, Kelly. How do you go about handling complaints? I mean, when you're selling $150,000 worth of product or 150,000 units worth of product, I'm sure you get your fair share of complaints. Sometimes
we do.
And you know, sometimes it's just, you know, educating them on how to do it correctly and stuff. But how do you handle the clients that are really bad? We're all in customer service and we all handle it differently, but I'm curious as to how you guys do it.
I handle it differently than how Pat would.
Okay.
and I think that's probably for the best. I try to relate to everybody as much as possible. I am very empathetic. Even if I know that they didn't follow the instructions, I try my best to help them. I want them to have the tub that they wanted, right? Yep. So that's what we do. If we have to send out a touch-up kit and walk them through, I mean, I've literally FaceTimed with customers before and tried to help them out. I mean, that's what I do. I love people, regardless, even the difficult ones, it's a good time. So I try to help them as best as we can. And I've trained our customer service staff to do the same thing. While we do believe, you know, customers are always right, we know that they're not. And we do our best to still give them the outcome that they want. So, okay. I mean, that's how we do it.
Okay, awesome. Patrick. Yeah. how would you handle it? Because I feel like we're cut from the same cloth where it's like when someone's kind of BSing you a little bit, it's hard to just hold your tongue. And that's kind of why I don't do customer service anymore. I strictly do commercial because, you know, I feel like I could talk to them a little bit more than a customer. So when you were doing it, I guess what was the biggest challenge of it aside from, you know, like what I just said pretty much?
Yeah, no, I think you hit the nail on the head with that one. We're very similar on that front. For me, if you call me and say, oh my God, I made a mistake, please help, that's an instant, I'll send you a free kit. Or it was when I was the guy. When it was the one-man show doing all that before we got where we are now, that was the truth. I'm very empathetic as well, as long as you're not trying to be sneaky. When you say, this product was damaged, or you did this, you didn't tell me, anything like that is going to be me trying to draw it out and say, you know, so which part of the directions that you followed didn't you follow? And try to wrap you up in that, because that's, you know, it's just not, I know better, and I know not to do it, and that's why I stay away. But when I was the one that was doing it, it would be probably 50% and 50%. I'd get most people that just, you know, I tried my best. I it looks so good. There's a ridge on the bottom. Like, is there anything you can do to help me? And it would be like, oh, do you need a non-slip? Like, I can send you a free non-slip kit. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, the front is all fish eyes or something. I would say, you know, sand it down and I'll send you a touch-up kit. Now that we have the roll on, it makes it a lot easier for us to actually fix the stuff. You know, you can roll a coat, and it's not going to crush us as a business. But starting out, giving any customer a refund or free kits, like, that directly affected my, you know, my end bottom line, and that was really hard for me. And now that we're at the level that we are, Kelly said it perfectly. You know, first thing we want to do is try to get you to be a repeat customer and speak highly of us. It costs a lot of money to get a negative review removed.
Yep.
It costs not a lot of money to make somebody feel better about it. And if they do feel better, there's a good chance that they tell their neighbor, like, this company's awesome. And we end up making money on the deal as opposed to, you know, being rude about it and just trying to blame them and not, you know, and try to be greedy and just keep everything. Like, in general, that's really the way we want to operate the business, is to be as fair as we can. You know, we might not be able to send you a $150 boron kit for free, but we probably can send you a one coat roll on so you can recoat the entire tub and smooth out anything that you need. You know, just as a courtesy, just to try to say, you know, that's what Bath Solutions is all about, and we respect them for that.
We'll take the time to get them to where they need to be. I will say, I do internally think the same way as Pat, but I just don't say the things to the customers and, you know, try to rein it in a little bit. So I do understand where he's coming from. And, you know, he's right most of the time.
I used to be a little bit more, here's the thing. It was hard for me to do it because I can kind of sense when people are lying. And sometimes, they'll just outright show you that they're lying. You know, one of the big things with traditional spray systems is that you can't use a bath mat on them, right? They'll start the suction cups. This literally happened like 2 days ago. The lady's like, I read the warranty to a T, and I followed all the instructions, and I see the rings from the bath mat. And she's like, no, how would you accuse me of such things? See the rings on the bath mat. On the floor from the bath mat. And she's just like, oh, well, what actually happened is that I read the warranty after I used the bath mat, but I switched it. And it's like, well, that doesn't help us any now. You lied. So, like,
that is as old as time.
Yeah. So, for me, it's like hard for me to hold my tongue. But what I tell the other people to do, since I'm not directly involved anymore, is just take everybody at face value. Just assume the best in people. Obviously, if someone's being crazy and, like, you know, they're you know, asking for refunds on a job that looks perfect and stuff like that, it's like, no, but, like, we will always try to accommodate. I literally, if someone complains about this dumbest thing, I always go back at least once as a courtesy, even if it's like a speck of dust, because I use it as an opportunity to get a review out of them. The review is going to get me so much more work, and, you know, it's going to do so much more for the reputation of our company than, you know, saying no over something so dumb. And use it as a time to educate the customer too, you know. So that's kind of how I handle it. I'm glad you guys do too, because, you know, I talk to a lot of refinishers, like I said before, and a lot of them, you know, one of the biggest issues, it's not the biggest issue, but I'd say one of them, is that people charge way too cheap for this stuff, for what we're doing. You're sending someone to someone's home to perform a professional service, and you want to charge $250 or $300. It's like, well, the moment you have to go back, now there's no money in it. So what do? They pretend like they're perfect all the time, and they like to, they don't even go and look at what happened, and they just, all the customers suck, and their reviews are down in the gutter. It's like, they complain about the industry as a whole when it's really just like, you have no customer service skills. And also, the race to the bottom is very much that. You're racing to the bottom. If you have no margin left, you can't afford to go out, then there's no point of you being in business. So that's, you know, one of the things I've seen. So I'm glad you guys operate that way, you know, too, where you guys take care of your customers and you know, receive feedback. So I'm going to jump into the spray on stuff, and I want to see if you guys have any questions about that once we get into it. But go ahead and explain what, obviously, I guess we can, you know, kind of brainstorm it, but what was the thinking going into the spray-on stuff? What has the success been like with it so far?
So with the spray-on, since literally the day that I first used Decapel Poron, I was like, I'm going to run this empire of greener finishing. How could hotels not want this? How this, how that? And because of the price I was charging, because I had to do it as a one-day service and take the entire day. I couldn't go do two or three tubs in a day or a shower. I had to charge, you know, $1,000 to do a tub. And I was comparing it directly with like a bath fitter, which, you know, at the time the liners were a lot more common. But, you know, once I started selling at retail, in the background, I was always messing with it. I put it in airless guns. I put it in, like, I ruined just so much equipment just messing with it. Don't do any of that nonsense. Everything we've done works, and it's repeatable every time at this point. But we wrecked a lot of equipment. We wasted a lot of time paying, you know, doing all this stuff so you don't have to. In general, though, my entire time was, like, things I would work on are only, how can I make this so you can do it in 2 hours? I tried doing it where I heated the bathroom to 150 degrees so it dries same day. I found a way to do that. It's possible. It's not very efficient, and it wouldn't be a good way to run a business, so that didn't work. Then I got the roll-on stuff going, and in talking to Russell about it, I'm like, well, no pro that sprays is going to want to switch and be a roll-on guy, so that's not going to work. And maybe 2 weeks after that, we were like, you know, why can't we get it in the turbine? We can do it. We locked ourselves in Russell's training lab, actually. At his location, we locked ourselves in for a weekend, and we sat there, and we changed the smallest thing maybe like 20 times, and eventually it was like, dude, it came out perfect. And, you know, we found that you can spray another coat right after, and then we're looking at it, and we're like, we got it. So once we had it, that then came the decision of, well, should we keep it for ourselves and try to build a new company, try to franchise that out? Should we try to chase like a miracle method? Should we just, you know, try to compete against Hawk and Midwest and all those guys? And we kind of sat on it for a couple of months, you know, sharing it with people that would call in saying that they've, you know, that they're spray guys. We would say, you know, we have this spray, you should try it. But we didn't do any marketing with it. We just did it in-house. Russell and his team used it on their properties. And once he started getting feedback from it, from the property managers that he was working for, he was like, dude, we got to do something with it. So we decided that we'd offer trainings. And that's when, you know, Russell signed on to be the trainer. And we tech support guy. You know, and at that level, we started posting that we had it. We still haven't found the right platform, right? Because, I mean, realistically, how many of us are there? There's, you know, maybe 1,000 guys, maybe 1,500 guys in the country. Mm-hmm. So getting to them and getting through the wall of, you know, it's not broken, why should I fix it?
Mm-hmm.
Those are the two biggest barriers for us. Right now, we have a pretty good base of people that were using roll-on or pour-on. We've switched them to do spray. I think Russell's done maybe 5 or 6 trainings. We really only released it a couple of months ago. So
yeah.
He's done 5 or 6 trainings. We have four or five companies ordering, you know, full sets every month or two. You know, ordering full, like, you know, 16 gallons or so at a time. They're doing pretty good, and they're guys that came up from nothing. It's a guy that was rolling one tub a week, is one of our best customers. He just ordered a full next level set like that, and he's trained a guy now. We've changed his life.
The messages I get from him.
It just feels great knowing that it's an option. I mean,
yeah,
for me. I was told a long time ago, you know, look around at who's doing what you do for a trade if you want to see if it's a good trade. And it would be, you know, if there's older guys doing it, then you're in a good spot. I don't think I've met more than one, maybe two people over 50 that spray tubs. It's not physically possible to just, you know, do that when you're 70 years old. going up there and you know, breathing the fumes and then climbing down the stairs, carrying everything. So for us, we were like, man, let's make it sustainable. Let's make it something you can do. And now that we've tried and tested it, we've sent it to, you know, labs for when you asked about the yellowing. We've done UV testing. We've done pencil hardness testing. We've done bonding tests. We've soaked things that were etched and not etched and tried to, you know, do bonding tests on all of that. You know, we care about you guys in general, and we want to make it a sustainable thing where it's something that you can both do it long term, you can be proud of it, and you can grow. So, you know, that's kind of the message and why spray came about, you know, for me chasing it in general.
Okay. And do you guys have any questions?
I have two questions.
Go ahead.
I'm dying to try it, honestly.
Yeah, well, we got some right there to try, but you go ahead with the question.
So one question is the variance in temperature. So when, you know, depending what region you're refinishing in, like in Florida, we use different types of reducers based off of how hot the day is.
And humid.
Do you guys have any tests in regards to dealing with the coatings and different ranges of ambient temperatures?
So in our end, we're up north, so we deal with a lot of different temperatures, you know, especially with the cold. And that's when we're switching over that we did all this testing in my facility. Mm-hmm. We tested, I'm telling you, like 100 different ways. How much acetone, how much, like, every number we recorded.
Yeah.
And I just treated it like I do with any product that you're using. Just adjust. You gotta understand, I'm in the field every single day.
Yep.
So for my tech to say, hey, this is new and now I have to do something different to it, that wasn't the way to go. Is we wanted for you to pick it up just like you do now and go to work and stuff. I haven't had a problem with the formula as is, the way we have it right now. And right now the temperatures out here are like in the 90s, 100s, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't have AC in that house, you know that bathroom is 100 and something.
Yeah.
The Echo Bell does act a little different from paint, but when you use your regular paint and you use acetone or whatever reducer you're using, it flashes off pretty quick from MEK to the acetone. It's a big difference on how it flashes off.
Yep.
With the Echo Pel, I haven't experienced the big flash off. It actually stays a little wet longer. So you could put the coats that's needed and stuff. So this was what I was telling Pat, that we shouldn't switch too much the method of doing things, because techs are not going to want to switch over to a different product. It's hard enough when you switch from a certain brand like Hawk to Mint. It's day and night.
Yeah,
correct. The spray totally different. So it's totally different also with this. But it's simple enough that you're only incorporating the top coat. And the only difference is that some techs use a gray primer.
Mm-hmm.
The ones use maybe that yellow one that I seen around and stuff like that.
Yep.
We just recommend use a regular epoxy white primer, or you could get the ones that we have that is the water-based one and stuff. And you don't have to switch anything other than the top coat. You got to understand that the fumes come from the top coat. Mm-hmm. When you leave, it's fuming out. It's gassing out. So that's the problem. When you do your primer, it flashes off quick. The smell is gone. Your fan should be efficient enough to get over the... get rid of the overspray fast enough.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not going to be smell.
Gotcha.
Now you do your top coat and you're all set. There's no flashing of smells. There's nothing else. It's like, I'm telling you that if you find a smell, I'm not going to say it's 100% gone. But we could definitely say with confidence that it's 95 or more higher gone.
Okay.
And this is ideal for the commercial industry, where I have walked into hotels that I've done, and I'm talking about high end. You can't open windows. I have my own filtration system, and we spray this stuff, and there's no complaints. Before it was like, oh, I have, you know, guests upstairs now complaining. This goes into their vents. You know what I mean? So this is the way to go when it comes down to commercial.
I would also add, I do have some spray techs that are using the spray in apartment complexes in like New York City. And one of them told me it was a game changer because he did not have to have his elderly, you know, wheelchair bound customer leave the apartment. He was allowed to use this product without having to have anybody leave, and it didn't bother them. Mm-hmm. So that, when that you know, tech told me that, I was like, oh my gosh, that is amazing. Yeah.
As long as your ventilation is obviously on point, like it's supposed to be, a tech knows what to do. They're in, you know, that bathroom secluded. They have their vents going. It doesn't change anything other than the smell, and that's the key. You know, there's no huge fumes after the overspray is to a minimum. Mm-hmm. Normally, you have that big cloud of overspray that you're, you know, waiting for the next coat because you have to vent out the bathroom. The overspray actually leaves a little quicker with this stuff. As you know, you protect yourself the same way. Everything stays the same, and that's the key. We wanted to keep it the same so the technicians don't have to switch their technique. They don't have to switch other than, you know, adjusting a little bit to the paint because mm-hmm. you can't go crazy how you do normally. It's just a little bit of adjusting, but it's all the same. And, you know, I think that's the key. And this is only what I'm going to call it phase two of this product. As Patrick said, there's still more stuff in development. We're still, testing this stuff out every single time we go out there in the warehouse, in my shop. You know, if there's something that's going on, we're going to test it. And stuff, and you know, hopefully phase three will come and is more better for what's going on and stuff. But as of now, this product is it works, and I'm not saying it just because I use it all the time and nice. Stuff. So,
are you guys offering custom colors, or is it just a standard white finish as of now?
So for now, we're mainly doing white. Mm-hmm. We have the ability to do others. Because I don't want to, until we pick up more volume and we get, you know, potentially just from this one show, I mean, we're reaching all the people that we want to reach, right, by talking to you guys. Yep. When we pick up our sales of white to pros, we may plan on stocking a couple of different colors. Right now, white, biscuit, black, gray, that's all I purposely stock right now. More can be done. What I think, and this is one that I'm gonna defer to everybody as we develop. Would you guys more prefer knowing the exact formula of how to tint white? Or would you prefer to buy China White, you know, or American Standard? Because stocking, you know, 10 different colors on the shelf so you can buy a quart or 1 gallon every 3 months is a waste for us, but it's also a big extra expense for you guys to pay an extra $10 to $30 for a color that you may or may not use a bunch if you had us specifically show you, you know, the exact formulation to make it for yourself. Where a tint kit could be, you know, $50 to $100, and you probably have a lifetime supply of tint. Except maybe
we've been with Midwest forever. Like my company's second generation. It was actually owned by my father for a long time. He was like a one man show, but for a long time they didn't do color matches. They would sell universal tints. Mm-hmm. They would come in a case.
I did Midwest for a long time.
Yeah. So yeah, they have the universal tints, and then if you had a blue or a red tub or whatever, you just make it yourself with the white. Yeah. So I think that might be a more efficient way to do it, especially for the pros who are used to color matching. That makes sense.
And one more question for you guys.
Company that does do that themselves. They have another one in Southern Florida that's doing exclusively biscuit tubs. He has just been buying white, and he'll just tint it himself. And and another guy has been buying all white and then 1 gallon of gray every time. I think he uses that to spray the tile and then he does the tubs white, but I'm not 100%.
Counters he's doing.
Yeah, all of that. Counters, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Do you guys intend to have a clear version of the top coat in case, we finish a lot of countertops as well, and with the multi-stone, and we do the marble effects. So a low VOC clear, is that in the future?
So we can make the exact formula of Acapel without color in it and make it clear. Mm-hmm. I probably will start stocking. I don't think it's going to be a huge seller, but I do think I will plan on stocking it when we re-up. This is probably the beginning of 25, when we'll start selling clear. When it comes, I'm glad that you asked about condoms. Are you sitting at the conference table, Kelly?
I am,
yeah.
And he mentioned his table having some epoxy, and I was like, oh my goodness, me too.
Hey,
so
nice.
That one, if you've seen my videos, you've seen some of my counters where I actually took the idea that Midwest had with the stamping. It works so good on those. I personally think that, and Russell and I argue about this one all the time, but I would rather not tape everything and plastic everything off to do like stone fleck or multi-spec. I would rather do it this way. I mean, I did that table in, 45 minutes?
I mean, yes.
Yeah. Did it in 45 minutes, maybe an hour max, including prep? Yeah.
I think a lot of people are afraid of the creativity part of epoxy. Like, that's one of the main reasons that people might prefer to spray it.
Yeah.
Like,
that's what he's...
So I did a lot of the pour on just like your table right there, and I got out of it only because of that. It's, you know, the yellowing and stuff like that, and it is a tedious thing. You have to babysit the thing because you want to be professional. You want it to be the best product, but it takes you a freaking whole day of just babysitting a counter. Now, how much are you going to charge for this counter? You know what I mean? So that's why I got out of it. I do the stone flake from Midwest. I just did one the other day, as a matter of fact. And I'm going to incorporate, once Pat is ready, this clear and stuff. So like that, you have the choice. Hey, do I want to do the big clear cloud, from Midwest, because for some reason, a clear hangs in the air longer than any other pigment and stuff. But this stuff goes on, very well. So
like glass.
Yeah, it goes on like glass.
Personally, based off what I talk to people about, if somebody were to come up with an easy way to do veining to make the marble effect come true and just be able to spray a clear on it and call it a day, most people would rather do that than pouring it and waiting for the design to show itself. Because here's the thing, you can kind of, if you can control the veining, you could also make sure that you're not going to get a crazy customer that doesn't like how it's heavier on one side than the other. A lot of people don't understand that this is random. With the epoxy, you could control it to an extent. But when you're doing especially an exotic pour with multiple colors, the colors just kind of go where they may. You know what I mean?
We call it chaotic beauty.
You're also in a time crunch with this pour on epoxy stuff. Yep. It heats up so fast that if you're doing multicolors, you really got to be on point that everything's ready for you to go. You're mixing all your colors and you're chasing the colors now because, this is flashing off and stuff. I have tried the spray on webbing, marble effect sprays. They seem to work very well. And all I had to do was give it the white base coat and hit it with the web, came out with the veins and stuff like that. So you Google as heavy or as light as you can, and then just clear it.
I saw someone, her name is Marissa. She's been on the podcast a few times. She has Permaglaze of Texas. She actually had a crazy good idea, and I didn't think of it until I saw, her do it. She buys the different nozzles for the marble effects, because a lot of people's main complaint with the marble effects is that it comes out too heavy. But with the thicker gauge nozzle that they sell, you put it on there and it comes out nice and flat. That way you don't have to sand in between coats and all that stuff.
So with that spray, again, it's just a little learning curve. It's not that bad and stuff like that. The key thing is, you know, you could buy a bunch of colors and stuff. So that's easy to do and it's done. So, you know, if you spray it down low, it gives you an effect. If you spray it up high, it gives you an effect. So, you know, it's just how you want the webbing to fly off and land and stuff. So it's just a little practice and stuff. But, you know, what she did was a good idea with switching the nozzle and stuff like that. But that's all it takes is, you know, how fast you move and how high or how low you are. Gives you a different effect, and it's crazy, but it's so easy. Instead of you loading up your gun with the specs and, you know, shooting this, letting it sit because you have to let that flash off, and then coming back and now clearing it, and you know what I mean? It's just more and more and more. I think that way is way quicker.
Yeah, for sure.
For me, with those, that's my argument with it is, so everything, all the other stuff that is on the market for counters, which I don't think you should do. I don't think Acapella is available to do crazy designs and stuff. You can do what's on that table. You can do a basic Carrera marble. You can do it the same every time. But that's one coat of material. There's nothing else there. There's no primer. There's no in between. There's no top coat. That's finished. It took me 1 hour to do that entire 12-foot conference table. And I don't have to go back and babysit it dripping, but that's because of the design of Acapella. It's so thick and heavy that it doesn't keep running off the sides. Once it gets there, after like an hour or so, once you wipe that bottom edge, that's it. There's no more drips.
What's the durability comparison to spray on Acapella versus Poron?
I mean, the Poron is probably 20 times thicker, so it's going to be. It's going to be harder in general to scrape it off and to break through it. In general, the pencil hardness was for the Poron, it was off the chart. You couldn't break it with any of the pencil tests. With the spray, it was a 6/6H, which is double the urethane.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it was a 6H, right, Kelly? We just got it weeks ago.
Yep, we just had it.
So it was a 6H as opposed to 3H, which is a basic aliphatic urethane.
Okay.
So I mean, in terms of hardness, it's very hard. Durability wise. It's almost impossible. Like I think you've seen my videos where I've smashed into tubs with hammers and all this nonsense. Uh-huh. Shower heads exploded. It's impossible to get a chip on the bottom of a Poron tub. Maybe on a corner you can get a chip there, and if water gets underneath it, it would be able to turn it into essentially a tub liner and have it, you know, lift up and stuff. Whereas with the spray, it's going to work the same as the, more or less the same as the way the urethane works. If you get a chip, you're going to have a little chip. It's not thick enough that it's going to bond together, to itself and peel off in sheets.
Okay.
Damage is going to be isolated damage. Whereas, it'll be slightly more frequent, but I mean, as opposed to like regular urethane, it's going to be around the same for damage callbacks from chips or anything like that. Potentially a little bit less because of the hardness variance, but we all know that people are people.
Yeah, I know that for sure.
It happens. I had one where I did 150 units at a hotel in Boston. And they installed shower heads with wands, and it was one of those like high end hotels where you know everybody's in a wedding or we're in the ballroom for an event or something when they stay there.
Yep.
So they're coming upstairs trash and they drop the wand.
Yep.
They gave me a complaint. This is just with regular urethane years ago, but it the shower one kept hitting the same place, and they were like, well, this stuff is cheap and it's not working, they're all getting chipped. And I was like, show me. And like, there's six of them, and they show me. They're in the exact same place every time. And I was like, dude, this is, I took the wand and I held it down there, and I was like, why would you install this here? This makes no sense whatsoever.
Yep.
But that was just an architectural error, and they were like, oh, right. And so I fixed all of those, and then they changed all the shower heads.
Yeah, I do. I do the tubs for the Grand Floridian at Disney, and they have these shower heads that are rectangular with sharp edges, yep. And when they hit the tub, they literally just spider web crack. I just tell them I'm not going to give you a warranty, and I still charge them like $750. I don't really care.
Yeah.
Like, but you know, it's up to them.
They're getting that for one night.
Yeah, yeah, especially at that.
We'll give you that all day just to make sure that you finish it today, so they can rent it tomorrow.
Exactly, exactly. I did want to mention the pricing. What do you guys charge for like a regular kit of EchoPel, and how much material does that get you, or like how much work can you get out of that?
Sure. So I have a whole breakdown I can share with you. We have a few different packages. The way we've done it is if you. Obviously, EchoPel is by ratio, right? So you're going to do a 3 gallons of part A to 1B. And if you do that with a primer, that one kit is about $1,000 it comes out to. And that gets you 30 sprayed tubs. So it goes up from there. Like the next one is up to 60 tubs. And the next one is up to 120. So it's typically 160 a gallon for up to 4, and it drops down. Like if you get 8 or more, it goes to 150 a gallon of top coat and down. I have a whole breakdown I can share with you, and that might be easier.
Essentially, you're getting like 30 kits, like 30 tubs from a complete set, right? So the 3-1 set is going to get you about 30 tubs. Depending on how much you use normally, but I haven't really seen anybody going any real less than that. What's that called?
It's the primer and the top coat for the 1,000. If you're just doing the top, it's 30 tubs for I think it's
640.
Okay.
So yeah, everything we do winds up coming down in volume discounts. You know, we have 3 different size packages that just bring it down a little bit more each time. Starting out, you know, gallons of top coat are like 160, and primer I think is 110. As opposed to the other manufacturers, we are not charging for shipping. We include that in the cost so that we don't have to play around and do that afterwards and say now you owe an extra $80. We're also in New Hampshire, which I think you guys are tax free also, right? So we're not adding tax or anything like that. So it's just the flat rate on them. You're getting 30 at that level. If you're up on our top tier, what is it like 140 or something like that?
Top level, I think it goes down to 130.
Yep. Yeah. So and that's probably like. Ordering a kit of like 24 kits or so.
Okay, and how many people have you guys switched over to spray on successfully? Do you know a count of how many you guys have so far?
I would say anywhere. Oh my gosh, I don't have to count. There's quite a few. Plus, we have a handful of trainees that have started their own businesses based off of this. But switch over. I mean, people aren't fully switched. A lot of people are adding it to their lineup. So especially for corporations that they work for, any of their commercial places, I'll get that where they have to use something, you know, zero or low VOC to even walk in the door, to even get a bid. So those people have added it to their lineup.
And just
something I noticed. Probably 10 to 12 buyers right now. And,
You guys' price per gallon also incorporates the cost of the Part B as well? Because I know a lot of distributors are, you know, you charge separately for the top coat and the catalyst.
The catalyst is charged separately in gallons as well.
Okay.
But it's in that first, like that $1,000 is the whole shebang.
Okay.
Of primer, part A, part B, and enough material to get you 30 tubs.
All right. We're having a little technical difficulties. We're fixing our camera really quick.
That's okay.
But Carlos, do you have anything you want to ask?
I've dealt with high VOC pretty much my entire life, and it's made me want to quit spraying so much. Obviously, you end up always going back to it because, you know, when you're good at something. But I'm really, really interested in this kind of stuff, especially you got me sold on the non-yellowing, because that was initially my biggest concern. Obviously, me dealing with epoxy, I do a lot of epoxy countertops. So this is zero VOC. I know you said earlier that you have waterborne epoxy primer. Can you guys talk to me a little bit about that? Because we have Midwest Chemicals down the street. It's what I've been using for the last 12 years of my life. I've dabbled with different kind of stuff a lot, but I mean, virtually everyone agrees Midwest Chemicals epoxy primer is like top notch as far as adhesion and everything and quick dryness and all that stuff. When you guys mentioned waterborne epoxy primer, that really left me, you know, like in my head, like, whoa, like I need to ask him more about that. So could you guys tell me a little bit more about this waterborne epoxy primer and how it works and mixing and all that stuff on that? I'm really interested in that.
Sure. So essentially, like I said before, we needed, like, Ecopel itself is going to give you the bond. It's going to do everything all by itself, but it's not going to cover the color. So in order to counter that, we needed something that was as strong of a bond that we could coat over that's going to get us the coverage. So we spent, it's probably about 4 months of trial and error with some different primers that we tested. The end result is very similar. It's modified from the formula, but it's very similar to like a waterborne, like concrete self-etching primer. Okay. So what it does after you prep the unit properly, this is formulated to be as simple as possible, since we were in the development the entire way. So we said we want it to be a part A and a part B and nothing else. So what this is going to be, it's actually you should have some there as well. It's weird because it's backwards. The A is the watery one and the B is thick. Which it just kind of blew my mind when I first saw that. But for this, all you're going to do is pour the A into the B into the A, stir it up, and go ahead and spray it. There's no extra additives. You don't add water. It's thin enough that it comes out. I mean, it comes out nice right away. And literally it's there just to do coverage and bonding. You have anything with it, Ross?
Yeah, no. So the water-based primer is very, very simple to use. And I know you're concerned about the fumes, like you're saying, and that's the reason why we are all over this. I use both. I'm still, you know, checking out the water-based primer just to see how it acts, how it reacts to, you know, everything. You know, I want to see how long it lasts, if it's going to be a callback because of the primer and stuff like that. And so far, so good. You know, I haven't had any problems with it. It literally is that no fumes.
Okay. That is
there amazing. Is an adjustment. There is an adjustment to it, of how you spray it, because, again, we're so used to, you know, the
thick coatings,
the stuff that we, and it flashes off quick. But since this is water-based, it's real thin. You know, it is a little adjustment because you might get runs and stuff like that. But when I tell you that there is no fumes when you spray this water-based product and stuff. And it's night and day and stuff. You don't change anything else. Like I said, you etch the tub, you do your thing, and you hit it with this primer, and you hit it with the top coat, and you're good to go.
So one of the things I wanted to ask you guys, and I was having a camera issue here, but this is a criticism I've gotten of Ecopel specifically, and I wonder how you guys would answer to it. Because, like I said before, I do talk to a lot of refinishers. A lot of refinishers were upset by the way that Ecopel was originally advertised and that now you guys are trying to get into spray-on. Because in the beginning, it was advertised as a DIY, harmful fumes, do it yourself. And a lot of people felt like, well, that's, you know, put it's going to directly compete with professional refinishers. How do you feel about that criticism? Did you think that it's founded at all?
So there's Pat's answer, where I think he, you know, will go off. But to be fair, right, I think it's different. And they don't know his story. So okay. I will just put that out first. Many people don't realize that he was a spray tech. He is a spray tech. And he has had that at the core of everything that he's done. Now go, Pat.
So to that one, I think when I first started and I put a lot of time and effort into trying to figure out how to make this pro friendly. Mm-hmm. I worked on that really hard and I couldn't find a way to get it to work. And unless you're going to be a pour-on guy, which I don't think makes, I just don't think that you can make enough money to do that. I basically gave up on it for about a year and finally picked it up again. But in that time, obviously, that's when we were blowing up and we had COVID, COVID taken out most of our competitors. And that gave us a big advantage and a leg up in this space. Somebody told me a long time ago when it comes to, a lot of different things, you can do whatever you want. I mean, you can go wire in your entire house if you really want to in most states. Mm-hmm. You can go to Sherwin-Williams, you can buy a gallon of paint. You can go to Home Depot and buy a cheap gallon of paint. This is really going to be what you're choosing. But when it comes to the actual work itself, I don't think that we're stealing customers away from you, because if you're looking to spend $50, $100, $150 to refinish your bathtub, they were never your customer. They're never going to triple their price. There's nothing you can say that's going to convince them to let you come into their house and make them pay four or five times more. And if you could convince them, they're the customer that's going to give you a guaranteed callback, because now they have to maximize their budget.
Yep.
So they're expecting you to give them perfection. But I do respect where refinishers come from, because when you're a one man show and you need that check, and then there's a potential threat out there. I think bigger companies that are larger, I think that they aren't as worried about, a DIY product. I think that smaller people, like the people that you said are competing on price, if you're charging $200 to do a tub, mm-hmm. and they can buy this for $150, now I am competing with you. Mm-hmm. I want that customer.
I prefer them to you.
So just to add on with Pat, the, do-it-yourself kit has always been around.
Yep.
You go to Sherwin-Williams, they have a do-it-yourself kit. You go to Home Depot, they have a do-it-yourself kit, spray-on. They got the Rust-Oleum now.
Yep.
I forget the name of it. It's all over social media now. Rolling a tub now.
Oh, yeah, I saw it on TikTok.
Yeah.
Those paints from China. Sorry.
Yeah.
It's not... when Pat came to me, like, hey, Russ, I got this new product. We need to test it out. I started with the pour-on. The pour-on is great, let me tell you. it's just tedious. It takes, you know, patience and for you to get that perfection out of that tub. If you have that tub poured on, you know, perfect, there's no, you cannot tell the difference between a pour on tub and a regular tub.
Okay.
That's how good the product lays out on the surface. You know, if it comes out perfect, you cannot see the difference between a regular tub and a pour on tub. Now, coming to the spray, Pat has always wanted to introduce the pour on and the spray on
to the market
technicians.
Okay.
To the markets, you know, to the pros and stuff. And that's why we are on the spray on side now. That it's more pro friendly.
Okay.
So because again, you don't have to adjust too much to the product. You already spray every single day. That's your routine. You go, you know what I mean, from prepping to spray. There's no change other than the product that you're spraying on and stuff. And the benefits of it is that there's no fumes and stuff.
Okay.
You know, whether you start with a regular epoxy primer like you do with Midwest and finish with the Ecopel, or use the water base and finish with the Ecopel, you know, the difference in fumes is significantly huge, huge difference.
You know, I would say one more thing with it too is, so it started with, obviously, we had no proper pro method. So it's more trouble than it's worth to try to sell pour-on to a pro. But now that we have the proper material and the proper way to function as a business working with pros, to just speak directly to anyone that's a pro that's listening to this or watches the show, we don't want to tie these two things together. If you are not an actual professional that's spraying tubs, this is not a product that you should go buy a Harbor Freight gun and do. You need to take a training and learn how to become a pro. You're gonna wanna have lessons and learn how to do it. And nobody's gonna be able to just go on the website and just buy our pro material. You're gonna need an account. You're gonna need to talk to Kelly's one of the people that you work with. We have a couple of other direct account managers that are going to help you get set up with pricing and ordering. But we're not trying to give anybody tips and tricks. I am not going to release any videos saying, hey, this is how you can become a spray guy tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I want to help the actual pros that care about their business. If you're coming to switch to us, I'm not going to make this some mainstream thing where I'm just going to produce 100 videos and say, go buy a Harbor Freight gun and good luck. Like, we're trying to keep it very separated and say, DIY is DIY. It's a different market. And, you know, the pro business is made for you guys. We want to help advertise your businesses. You know, if major hotels call or anything like that, we want to ship them to whoever we work with. That we trust, you know, honestly. I mean, there's obviously fly-by-nighters that that exist in the industry, plenty of them. But we don't want to support that. But if you don't have high ratings and you know, we're not gonna share clientele with you because we wanna help boost your business specifically. Anybody, like I said, that's listening that needs the reassurance of that. That is what we're looking for. We're not trying to get every customer that we can get through the door. We want to work with long-term customers, and we want to help grow their business as a team, and we want to advertise and do that properly. So any feedback you guys have for us or anybody listening has, you know, definitely send it to us, because we want you to understand that we're on your side. We're doing this for all of us.
Well, one of the biggest things with this industry as a whole is awareness of the industry. You know, it's hard enough to get brand awareness. It's even harder that a lot of people don't know what it is. You tell them you refinish tubs, they're like, what the heck is that? Which is why my content strategy, this is going back to what we were talking about really in the beginning, Kelly. It was, putting out content often and stuff like that. It's really more about just putting it out. Honestly, I stopped overthinking it. I used to want to be like, I want to make the best thing possible. those are the ones that perform the worst. I literally put out a meme. It was like a meme video with the bath mat thing that I was telling you about. And it got like 6,000 views by itself. Then I'll go and I'll put a carefully curated piece of content out and it'll get like 10 views. It's really just more about volume.
Yeah. There's no rhyme or reason. And trying to market, you know, something where I've known that there is this hesitation in the spray refinishing industry to come towards a DIY product. And Pat's right, we absolutely try our hardest. And that's also where I struggle and teeter in the social media market, because I don't want to, you know, push DIY and think that pros think that, you know, that's all we're doing. And, you know, it's a fine line to walk.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that any pros, I vet them. Mm-hmm. You know, I do my best, because I don't, like he said, I don't want somebody going to Harbor Freight getting a sprayer and trying to use it. No, that's a bad representation of what we're trying to do. We don't want that. So I will, you know, tell pros, if you buy products from us, you get listed on our website. And we say, here's a pro installer. If mm-hmm. you don't want to do it yourself, here's somebody who knows how. Here's somebody that can still give you that, you know, zero VOC. If there are any hotels that call us, apartment complexes that call us, you don't want to do it, you want to hire out, here you go. Here's our list of people that use our product. So we do want to support these techs, you know, in their business.
Okay. You have any other questions, Jonathan, Carlos?
Honestly, no. You guys have answered everything. Both these guys know, with me, it's always been about, you know, the toxic stuff as far as spray. So really, I can't wait to try it. Like, I really do. I'm going to give this a shot.
Yeah, we could do a follow-up after and just, you know, continue to talk about, like, how everything came out and stuff. Any questions, Jonathan, before we get off of here?
No, I'm just interested in the water-based epoxy.
Yep.
Because, you know, cabinets, mm-hmm. we refinish cabinets as well, and everything's going water-based. Yeah, and they're pretty bulletproof on the cabinet side. So I'm interested to see if we can integrate that into the tub refinishing.
I agree.
Yep.
Yeah, well, I also love the cabinets and stuff, and you know, so I deal with all those paints, whether they're still in the urethanes or the like Renner,
RTKs, yeah. Renner, yeah. Envirolac,
Envirolac, ICA, all those yep. products and stuff. So, you know, that's why I have my shop and stuff. So I know where you guys are coming from and stuff like that. So,
oh yeah, like, yeah, no man, cool. it was a pleasure, guys. Honestly, if you guys don't mind, just to, you know, kind of pick you guys' brain, Carlos again here. I'm going to be kind of hitting you guys up because with me doing cabinets, I switched to water base for the same exact reasons why I could potentially be switching to Ecopel, because of the toxicness. I mean, I used to drive home after doing a tub, and man, I'd sit in my car and I'm just like, I am high right now, and not a good
especially
high.
Florida.
Especially Florida, yeah.
Exactly. He, you know, all those fumes in that van, and, you know.
Yeah.
Trust me, I know exactly what you feel. I still use the regular stuff, let me
tell
you.
That's not okay, guys.
But I switch back and forth, and
no.
You guys could take it as, you know, an added force to your arsenal and stuff, and be like, hey, you know what? You know, obviously, you want the low VOCs. You could charge an upcharge for
exactly.
it, just like I do.
Absolutely, 100%.
And eventually, you'd be like, you know what? This is working. This is the way I want to go, and you could just switch 100% just to Ecopel,
especially high end hotels.
Yeah,
the
hotels.
Right? Spoken to these places, and they, you know, they put it in their corporate goals and initiatives and all that of eco-friendly. Mm-hmm. Well, there you go.
You guys know more than others that, you know, you cannot open windows in a lot of the hotels, main hotels, big branch. You cannot open windows. There's no windows
mm-hmm.
and stuff. So I have to incorporate a system to use that is going to be, you know, that they're not going to complain about. And, you know, it's got to be good for you, because remember, now you're limited to how you're venting. And, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like I said, I developed my own vent system and stuff like that just for hotels. Mm-hmm. And incorporating this into it is like overkill now. It's like I don't hardly need it
mm-hmm.
because this stuff, there's no fumes and stuff. And there's the overspray is, you know, hangs around a lot less.
Okay.
So
All right. Well, I want to thank you guys for coming on. Final thoughts from you guys, and then we'll go ahead and set it off. We'll start with Kelly.
Final thoughts? I mean, I'm just happy that we got a chance to have this conversation, and I appreciate you inviting us on, because I do think there is some misunderstanding amongst technicians of what we're trying to do to support you guys. So I do appreciate that. And honestly, if you guys have any questions, I'm available all the time. You have my personal cell phone number. Text me. And I know the same is true for these two.
Yep. I know. So same thing, like she said, you know, we appreciate you guys, you know, inviting us on this podcast and stuff like that. It's pretty cool and stuff. And like I said, like she said, we're available anytime. Any questions, anything you guys think, me and Pat are available. You know, if you guys want us to, we want to go out there and see if we could help you guys out, you know, with the product and stuff like that. So that we're also available for that. You guys could come out here and we'll appreciate it if you come. So you can see the facility, you know what I mean? This is not your average out of your basement or garage product, you know what I mean? Like, you know, there's a facility, there's a warehouse, there's two shops and stuff. So you guys could check it out yourself. You could spray it here and see how, you know, how it behaves and stuff like that. Troubleshoot with us right here. So, you know, we'll appreciate it if you guys could come down as well. And me and Pat will also go out there and see your operation and stuff like that at some time in the future.
Yeah, that would be awesome, man. That'd be great. And you, Pat?
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. I was going to say, Russ and I would definitely be interested in coming down. I do Orlando a couple times a year as it is. And I'd love to meet up with you guys if, you know, regardless next time I go down there. But in general, for you and for any other pro that has any interest in the material, if you're in or around Southern New Hampshire, Boston, feel free to call us and come by. We can, we don't have to do a full training. We can walk you through, show you the location. I've actually toured a couple of the plants for some of the other manufacturers when I was a spray guy. And I really thought that was just kind of a cool experience to get to talk to the people right then in person and know that I'm not dealing with a hole in the wall establishment. And we have a 12,000 square foot facility that has everything there. You know, you can literally see the material being made there. But I'd love for, anybody that's in the area that wants to check it out, come up and check it out. You know, let us know. We'll set up a time where we can be there and take you for a little tour, maybe even show you, just a quick little tutorial of it. But, there's that. And the last thing that I'll say, just in regards to the product, when you do go ahead and use it, anybody that we send any samples to as well, the only difference in function that you'll see is that it doesn't dry in between coats, but don't let that scare you. I had one person that waited like 2 hours for the first coat to dry or something like that. And two or three hours he waited and was like, this isn't feasible. Like, no, it's going to be wet. It doesn't dry in between coats, but it's shocking that it doesn't run when you spray the second coat over a wet material. Like, wait, whatever we have on the instructions, I think it's 15 minutes in between coats for the top coat. It's still going to be wet. Go ahead and lay it on there. It'll be fine. If you do get any drips, literally you can take a foam roller, and Russ and I did it a few times. We just roll right over it and it disappears. It's not like how it like tears it all off the wall with urethane. Like, you literally can just roll it one tile and you're perfect. It just comes back. Anyways, I'll stop now, but I appreciate you guys so much for this opportunity to be on. This is a great platform to reach out to literally the people we want to work with, and we're open to any feedback and suggestion that any of you guys have for us. So we wish you guys the best, and hopefully we can do it again soon.
Thank you, and next time we'll do it in person. Thank you guys so much for the time. I appreciate it. I'll go ahead and do the outro here now, and that's it for now.
You guys are awesome.
Thanks, Chad.
You've been listening to the Bathtub Refinishing Podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to keep up with the Bathtub Guys on YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram, or visit bathtubguys.com for more. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.